Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John McClane. I don't know if John McClane's ever said a bad word about anyone we've asked him about.
Oh, he loves Bruce.
Other than a few. John, are you a big Bruce Springsteen fan?
Sports writer, of course he is.
I am, and my all-time favorite song is Thunder Road.
Are you a Kenny Chesney fan?
Fan. What does that mean? I've been to 10 or 15 Springsteen concerts here, and I've been to one by Chesney.
Did you like the Kenny Chesney concert?
It was fine. Nothing against him.
All right, that's good. Hey.
Nothing against him. He's fine. He's just like a lot of the country artists. I respect them. I know what they've done is tremendous. They have large followings, but he wasn't one of my favorites.
We may have found the one sports writer in America who loves Bruce Springsteen, is also okay with Kenny Chesney. That's what we love about having John McClane on this show. Twice a week, every week.
Pat Bolin and Gil Brandt, the two contributor nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, both almost guaranteed of getting the 80% from us in the room. We tend to, if not rubber stamp, expedite the candidacies of the contributor candidates that are put together by a committee of a few of us. Your thoughts on both of them? And I know a lot of people felt like it was too long a wait for Pat Bolin. They would have liked to have for it to happen when he was in better health, but better late than never.
Well, that would be nice, but that's not what the committees don't base it on. That, you know, Bolin's had Alzheimer's for years. I don't know anybody could complain about not being into this point outside of Denver, of course, where they thought he should be in the first year. But Gil Brandt, been in the NFL since 59, baby photographer hired by the Cowboys, invented computer scouting, has an impact. After he was fired by Dallas after 30 years, he's had an impact on the NFL for NFL Network, NFL.com. There's not many people who've had a bigger impact on the NFL, and I'm so excited that we're going to put Gil Brandt in there. And the one that I think that should be next, and a lot of people are pushing for Robert Kraft, George Young, the late great general manager of the Giants, was 5-time NFL executive of the year, hired Bill Parcells, and they won 2 Super Bowls together. George Young deserves to go in next.
I like George Young's candidacy a great deal, and look forward to being able to vote for him hopefully soon.
John, you don't see a lot of 5-0 football games. We got that last night, though, between the Eagles and the Browns in the preseason.
Yeah, I wonder how many baseball teams outscored the Browns last night. I haven't looked, but I would imagine it was considerable. The thing I took away from that game, Myles Garrett, who we've known here since he was a freshman at Texas A&M, he's about to explode. You know, Greg Williams likes to blitz, but when you've got Myles Garrett playing end in your 4-3, he can stay healthy. He was hurt at A&M. He got nicked up last year, but he can be the next great pass rushing end.
John, yeah,
he's got some phenomenal push.
John, I'm counting 5 Major League Baseball teams that would have beaten the Browns 5 points last night on the Major League Baseball scoreboard.
That is absolutely amazing. Then you see, how often do you see teams get shut out?
All of them would have beaten the Eagles.
Yeah,
I mean, that was an embarrassing performance by the Eagles offense. And the fact, you know, people act like Nick Foles was the be-all, end-all. He had 2 good games, and they happened to be the 2 most important of the year. But their first playoff game in Atlanta, they had an ultra-conservative game plan. And if Julio Jones hadn't dropped a pass, Atlanta could have won that game. And now Foles is playing worse than he ever did. I saw a great stat today that when Foles has been good, he's been very good. When he's been bad, he's been very bad. And only 8 games, could you say, in his career that he's been mediocre. So it's all or nothing with Nick Foles. And last night it was nothing.
He could very much go down. I mean, his story was fantastic and the achievement was fantastic. History may show him to be a Joe Flacco who had a great run and hasn't done much outside of that, though he's playing well right now. But I don't have a lot of faith in him reviving his career. I think we're going to know Joe Flacco as a guy that caught fire for a playoff run. And Nick Foles did it, but did it, you know, filling in for a guy, which makes it even a better story.
Foles rode Wentz's coattails. Flacco had the whole thing, of course. And Flacco wasn't a ham sandwich before that. But to me, Flacco, what he did is a lot more impressive than what Foles did. And remember the offseason, there were people, oh, man, you should trade two number one picks to get Nick Foles. And I'm thinking, why? Because of two games?
Speaking of that trade thing, there's a little bit of buzz on my Twitter timeline once in a while, but especially now, Arakpo hasn't played since the third day of camp. I just reported Derek Morgan could be out 4 to 5 weeks after tearing a meniscus. Outside linebacker depth, an issue here for sure, even with Harold Honor Landry in-house. A lot of people tweeting me, hey, they should just trade next year's first for Khalil Mack, which they don't seem to get. That getting Khalil Mack doesn't solve the contract for Khalil Mack.
And he'd get him for number one. You'd have to pay your next number twos for even getting a conversation. And something that I heard about Mack I thought was interesting, that a lot of his holdup on a new contract has to do with how it's structured, because when they move to Vegas, and we're still not sure exactly when that'll be, the tax laws are so different. He will make another $2.1 million based on the projections a year by being in Nevada instead of California. Can you imagine all of a sudden you move and you get $2.1 more million a year?
It's nice. Not bad. Hey, John, it seems increasingly coaches and especially veteran players showing the lack of importance in preseason games. We know why they're there. Television money, opening the gates for more dates. Where do you think this is headed? Is there going to be a change with this? Because the more and more the top guys aren't playing at all in these preseason games, are we getting to a point where we're actually going to see a change with some of this?
Well, the owners are not going to give up money. They're getting full ticket prices. People are not buying all the beer they want since the seats are not full. It's so interesting. I talk to former players all the time who played when there were six games. Veteran starters played every game. The last game, they went the distance because it was the warm-up for regular season. And they swear, and I agree, there were no more injuries then than there are now, because they say that their bodies were built up, you know, to take the licking and keep on taking. And I think, and I agree with that. I don't know what the answer is. They're so paranoid about injuries right now that it's become a farce. I don't know. I know Bill O'Brien here would rather have joint practices than preseason games, but you, of course, can't charge full prices. So I don't see the let up at all unless the league sends some kind of mandate. You've got to play your starters this, which they will never do.
Yeah, the line from Todd Gurley about not playing the preseason, his quote was, that's everyone's dream to not play in the preseason. Some guys just like being out there to get a feel for it and to see, but not this guy. I think that sums it up for a lot of players in the NFL.
It does, and we'll see if that has an effect on Gurley. I remember one time Emmitt Smith played two plays, and I think won the rushing championship, and they won a Super Bowl.
John, a well-renowned NFL veteran, his name's on the plaque for the best writers on football in the country at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, highly decorated, longtime friend of the show and the station. John, I was talking to Dave McGinnis about this earlier, another thing that serves to make the preseason even more irrelevant. I mean, there was a time not that long ago, Jeff Fisher had some of these seasons, where it was important for him to win some preseason games to generate some buzz and some marketing ability. And I think, America's well aware nowadays that winning preseason games doesn't mean anything, that the Cleveland Browns going 4-0 last year doesn't mean anything. These coaches can say, yeah, we want to win, we always want to win and all that stuff. But at the end of the game, it really doesn't matter who wins, and it can't be used as a sales device for or against the team.
You don't go out of your way to win, but anytime you win, it's better than losing. Because on teams now are so many young players who are not going to make the roster, and most of them know it. and winning a game, like making a big play to help your team win, you can always look back on that and say, I did this. Yes, it's a preseason game, but I still did it. And Dave's right. You know, when Dave was an assistant coach back then, they had to win. New coaches had to win. You know, you brought in a new system with new coordinators. You wanted your players to buy what they were selling, and the best way to do it was win in the preseason and show the players, hey, see, this system's working. Or you show an owner, see, I'm the right guy for you to hire fans, and now nobody buys it because everybody understands it's not totally worthless. They do have to evaluate players, especially on special teams, backup positions. I know here I wrote a column for tomorrow with their general manager, Brian Gain, trying to convince me it's still important for depth and special teams these last two games. And I'll tell you this, after this third game, if you need that last game to tell you who's going to be on the roster, you haven't been doing your job, because they've had these guys since the rookie minicamp, OTAs, minicamp, training camp, preseason. They ought to know who's doing it. And I'll tell you a great thing I wrote about today, and I tweeted it three times today. Trevor Daniel has a good chance to beat out Shane Lechler. And when I started talking about this on radio last week, people are like incredulous. Well, how could Shane Lechler, one of the greatest punters in history, lose his job? I said, he's not losing it. It's Trevor Daniels is winning it with nets of 43 and 47 yards. The kid's been kicking the hell out of the ball, and Lechler knows it. And Lechler says, I'm in the biggest fight of my life for my job. Lechler's coming off the season with a 49-yard average, 41 net, third most inside the 20, second most fair catches, and third fewest touchbacks. That's pretty good, but he turned 42 last week. He's in his 19th season. He's not slowing down, but Trevor Daniels breathing down his neck, and they got two games left. That is one position battle that is yet to be determined, and people here, it's more, this punting battle is more significant than anything else Texans got going on, since the starting jobs are set.
John, do you know where Trevor Daniel is from?
Nashville.
He is from, well, no, actually a place you come to every time you come to Middle Tennessee, Dixon County. He Dixon is from Dixon County. County High School, just west of Nashville. He was a walk-on at Tennessee, and he was terrific there as a walk-on, and a big kid, too.
I talked to him. I did a story on him right after the last day of minicamp, and I said, why would you come here with Shane Lechler here? He said, because I've wanted to learn from the best, and because he's going into 18th or 19th season, and that was pretty good. You know, his agent could have gone a lot of places, but ultimately I thought they made a mistake coming here, but seeing how well he's kicking for a new special teams coordinator in Brad Seeley, who won three Super Bowl rings with the Patriots, but they moved on from Adam Vinatieri for Steven Goskowski. And last year he was in, Brad Seeley was in Oakland when Sebastian Janikowski got hurt. He was here when they didn't renew his contract. But I just think new coach comes in, it's a better chance. And Daniel didn't hold at UT, but he did it in practice a lot. Shane Leckler's a terrific holder. So that's something that figures, we take that for granted, but that figures into it. If Trevor Daniel makes the roster, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I won't be surprised.
And Lechler probably lands somewhere.
Oh, if he wants to keep playing, the reason he came here is he's been living outside Houston his whole career, and this is his sixth year here now, 19th overall. I talked to him about John Gruden, because Gruden was his coach at Oakland when they started off great, and he thought, wow, this is great. I'm going to be in the playoffs and go to the Super Bowl every year. And then, of course, Gruden got traded to Tampa, and they went straight down the toilet. But I asked him, were you surprised Gruden came back? He said, I was surprised it took him this long. I always thought he would come back.
Speaking of Gruden, the Raiders cut 2017 second rounder, Obi Melifonwu. A lot of people taking that as Gruden further establishing just who's in control in Oakland, and it's not Reggie McKenzie.
Well, Gruden, he makes the decision. You pay a guy $20 million a year. But the thing, that kid at the combine, Paul, you remember, he put on a show. Now, they couldn't figure out if he's a corner or if he's a safety. They wondered how serious he is about football. He's going to have, I'm assuming, that he'll get claimed, but he would have multiple teams interested in him because of his youth and his athleticism. And they could say, well, just because he can't play for Gruden coming back after 40 years doesn't mean he can't play for us.
John, am I simply being seduced by Hard Knocks when I say that I think the Cleveland Browns could be decent this year when I look at that roster?
Well, Chad, that depends on what you call decent. You know, they said there's more action in Vegas on the Browns winning at least six games. Would you take the over?
I'll say this, 8-8. I think they're going to go 8-8 this year.
Well, I wouldn't bet anybody on that. I think if they win five games, that'd be terrific. And the reason I say that,
I'd get odds favorable to me if I did bet on that. That's for sure. If I were to win.
At some point, Baker Mayfield's going to be the quarterback. We saw Tyrod Taylor go down last night with a wrist injury. People thought that he was going to be out. And I think if he didn't have Mayfield breathing down his neck, he wouldn't have come back. There's no reason for a veteran quarterback to come back in that situation with a wrist or hand injury, whatever it was. But let me tell you, I got seduced by Tampa Bay last year. They were coming off a 9-7 season. I got all caught up in it, picked them to go to the playoffs, and boy, I looked stupid.
Yeah, I keep trying to guard against it because I'm really getting into some of these guys in the Browns roster by watching this show, and it's fun to watch. But I'm looking at all those first-round picks, too. They've picked so high for years now where they've got talent. It's just putting it together.
They do have some talent, but a lot of those number one picks are no longer there.
It's true.
And did you know, I saw this today, Bob Wiley, the fat offensive line coach, has seven toes on one foot.
Wow, that does not surprise me somehow.
Like some of the animals he's showing, those guys.
What do you think about his strength and conditioning insight, John, about how we won World War I and World War II with push-ups, sit-ups, jumping jacks, and running?
I thought that was hilarious.
That was great.
I'm wondering, you know, they're working their way down. They go from Todd Haley and Greg Williams cussing like crazy. You know, they're going to see who's going to be their interim coach. Then you go down to position coaches, and Wiley is a hoot. And did y'all see that thing on the internet of Wiley, like at a team party, on a slip and slide where he took a big running start and went sliding off the thing?
It's great.
And I think he's a character. That's the thing I like about Hard Knocks, showing us guys we would never see, letting us learn their personality. And I'm pulling for the Browns anyway. I think the NFL is better if the Browns are good. I can actually remember back that long. I think it'd be just a tremendous story.
Again, he also have to get Hugh Jackson out of the way.
He had a great line, too, about stretching, John, where he said, I don't think that our guys stretch before they storm the beaches of Normandy. They didn't have to stretch.
Grabbing their hamstring while they're storming the beach,
yeah.
All of a sudden pulling up and going down.
It was great. John McClain joins us twice a week, Tuesday and Friday every week, Houston Chronicle. He's a Hall of Famer. He's our Hall of Famer. And you can hear John McClain twice a week right here on the Midday 180. John, thanks so much. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
And Chad, Paul, y'all have a great weekend.
You too, John.